Well, thank you all for being here. It's very nice out right now, and that's bad for church attendance. So I appreciate you guys. If I was allowed to distribute extra jewels in the crown, I'd be doing it right now for you. Tonight we got kind of a strange verse. This is the first Sunday of Lent. This is when we begin to enter into this season of wilderness, this 40 days where we, it's 40 days, kind of this magic number that they have in Scripture, a lot of preparation, this time where we prepare for Easter instead of just skipping directly to it. And the passage, this lectionary cycle this year, is Mark's version of this, which is kind of strange, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And so we're really going to talk a little bit more than just the wilderness tonight. We're going to kind of talk on the front end of it, and then in the middle of it, and then afterwards, if it's all right with you guys. And I'm not typically a very big fan of this telling in Mark compared to some of the other places and the other gospels. And so, and there's a reason. I'm a big fan of storytellers. I like people who can spin a good tale. Right, I'm a big fan of that. I like someone who, especially if it's an experience that I had with them, and I know it's kind of a simple experience, and maybe it's something that you could communicate the facts on pretty quickly. But they're the kind of person that next time you're around, they're going to recall that story, and it's going to turn into 20 minutes, and it's going to be really funny and engaging. And at the end of it, you're going to be like, man, that's a lot better than what I even remember it being. And then you kind of adopt their version of the story as opposed to maybe what you even remember. And it doesn't even have to be 100% true as far as I'm concerned. If it's a good story, as long as no one's hurt in the embellishment, I'm okay with it. I like a good storyteller. It's my favorite kind of comedians and those kind of things, the people who don't just necessarily tell a setup and then a punchline joke, but someone who can just tell a story, right, and make it interesting or make it funny. And that's part of the reason why I've always liked this first Sunday in Lent, because it's just really interesting storytelling, especially if you get like into Luke and that kind of thing, and you have this Jesus going into the desert, and you have these Satan showing up, and there's three different temptations, and there's kind of different varieties of temptations, and Satan will say something, and Jesus will have a quick comeback to it, and there's this kind of play going on, and you can make a 3, 4, 5 week series out of these things, and it's just good storytelling. And I like it, and that's why I kind of look forward to this Sunday most years. And then you get to Mark's year, and Mark manages in five verses that we're going to cover tonight, five verses. Mark manages to talk about Jesus, talk about John the Baptist, Jesus' baptism, Jesus in the wilderness, John's arrest, and the announcement of the kingdom of God in five verses. In five verses. That's terrible storytelling. Right, I mean, that'd be like if you and I hung out for the first time and you said, well, Mike, tell me a little bit about yourself. And I was like, born in Michigan, lived in Florida, moved to Georgia, got married, moved to Mississippi, procreated. What about you? You know, okay, awesome. Great storytelling, Mike. I feel like I know you so well now. Tell me more about that. I want to know more than that. And essentially, that's kind of what Mark does here. He just kind of bam, 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 just rolls through everything, right? And so for that reason, this makes it kind of a strange one to preach, because so much is covered with such little detail that it's hard to know what to focus on at all. So I'm going to assume that Mark made this decision intentionally, that he wasn't just, such a phenomenally bad storyteller that he decided to write a gospel account, but there was some intentionality behind this decision on what to focus on and what not, and what to kind of group together. And so we're going to talk about kind of the three scenes that are in this text separately and then as a whole. And I'm going to go with the idea, at least for this year, that all three of these things are important for Lent and not just kind of the wilderness portion in the middle. All right, so let's go ahead and we'll read through these verses. It should take us at least 4 to 5 seconds. So Mark 1, verses 9 through 14 says this. It says, about that time, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee. I'm sorry, I don't know why that thing works. Just pop it all the way out and then pop it back in. I'm not sure why it's being so iffy. About that time, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee. And John baptized him in the Jordan River. While he was coming up out of the water, Jesus saw heaven splitting open, and the Spirit, like a dove, coming down on him. And there was a voice from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I dearly love. In you I find happiness." So Jesus comes out to John. He's baptized in the Jordan River. While he's coming up out of the water, Jesus saw heaven splitting open and the Spirit like a dove coming down on him. Now, the language here is a little vague as to whether or not everyone can see this or if this is just kind of a personal thing that's happening with Jesus and what he sees and what he hears is only him. We don't really know. The language kind of would allow for either. Spirit coming down on him and a voice from heaven, "You are my son whom I dearly love. In you I find happiness." Right, so this really, really beautiful scene and actually very much echoes what we just finished talking about. Where you have the transfiguration on Transfiguration Sunday, get up on the mountaintop, you have this whole amazing scene where Jesus starts glowing, and then suddenly there's heroes of the faith there, and then this Peter's like, "Let's do something, build something, let's do something, we can't just sit here," and then a cloud takes everyone over, and then a voice of God comes through and says, "This is my son," and then he says, but it says, "Listen to him," right? And then Jesus gives them a command right after listen to him, and the command is, "Don't tell anyone what you just saw," which is really mean, but funny to me. And so, and the same kind of language, "This is my son, this is my beloved," right? It's really beautiful imagery of Jesus, you know, and we gotta remember, most of Jesus' life is unaccounted for, right? I mean, roughly, this happens when Jesus, you know, roughly he's about 30 years old. Jesus dies when he's roughly 33-ish, you know, somewhere. I mean, around that, which means literally 90% of Jesus' life we know nothing about. And that always blows my mind, that 90% of Jesus' life, you know, before his ministry, public ministry started, that means for 90% of Jesus' life, he was just like Jesus, the next door neighbor, the guy around the block. Yeah, I played soccer with him. I don't know if they played soccer. Probably not in sandals, but... borrowed a cup of sugar from Jesus today. Which should make you feel at least a little bit better about how mundane your life sometimes feels, right? Jesus' whole life wasn't just, you know, loaves and fishes and walking on water. There's, you know, there's other stuff too. And so we have this moment, and I don't know. I'm not trying to read anything. I don't know how much Jesus needed to hear this. Or how much those there needed to hear it, or if it's just kind of a confirmation for those of us that are going to read the story later on, I'm not sure, but it's this obviously very important moment. You are my son, you are my child, my beloved. I love you. In you I find happiness. You make me happy. I find joy in you, right? Really poignant, beautiful thing. If you're anyone who's a parent can definitely connect to this. Right? This kind of doting parent. Moment. Beautiful. And then Mark goes directly in to the next thing. At once, the Spirit forced Jesus into the wilderness. He was in the wilderness for 40 days, tempted by Satan. He was among the wild animals. And the Greek there is therion, I think is how you say it. And it means like dangerous animals. This is not like Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder. Like, you know, it's not like, you know, some cartoon thing where, you know, Jesus is, you know, doing the St. Francis deal out in the middle of the woods with some, like dangerous animals. This, like there's meant to be risk is meant to be implied here. Tempted by Satan, he was among the wild animals, and the angels took care, and that word took care is serve, is where we get deacon from, served him. And that's all he says about that. You are my beloved son, whom I love, I find joy. You make me happy. Now go to the wilderness for 40 days, get tempted by Satan. There's dangerous wild animals all around. And it says the angels served him. I don't know what any of that means. Like, what animals? What were they doing? How were they dangerous? What did an angel protect them from? Was there an angel that like killed a bear or something? I need these kind of details. Don't just gloss over them, Mark. But that's all he gives us. As soon as there's this announcement, this pronouncement of "You are my beloved son, I love you, you make me happy," there's this push to the wilderness where temptation and danger and care happens. And then because Mark doesn't waste any time, after John was arrested, you know, no details necessary there, After John was arrested, Jesus came into Galilee announcing God's good news, saying, "Now is the time. Here comes God's kingdom. Change your hearts and lives and trust this good news." John's arrested. Jesus starts his public ministry after the baptism, the beloved child, the wilderness. Here comes God's kingdom. Change your hearts and lives and trust this good news. With all respect to the Bible, this feels like bad storytelling. Right? I could make way more than a 45-minute story out of this stuff if you just give me a little bit of time. I've already done, you know, like five. So we have three things here that happen very quickly. Jesus is identified as the beloved Son. Jesus is driven into the wilderness, tempted, endangered, cared for. And then the good news of God's kingdom is announced. Just like that. Now, in this case, for me, as I've been going through this week, it was very tempting for me to pick one of these things and try to focus on it. Because any one of them we can run with. We can run a lot farther than Mark did. But maybe part of the point here is that they are all connected, that they are meant to be grouped together. Maybe this is a stool with three legs that doesn't quite stand without all three for Mark. So even though it kind of precedes and follows the theme of wilderness on that first Sunday of Lent, let's briefly talk about all of them together as events that are hinged and dependent, and maybe all of these things that should guide us in our Lenten season. First, the naming and the calling. During this baptism, Jesus hears the voice of God. "You are my beloved child, my child whom I love. You bring me happiness. With you I am well pleased," maybe is what your verse says. Simple, concise, beautiful description of the essence of baptism and what calling looks like. It's the realization and response to who we are to God. It's the realization and response that we are, in fact, the beloved children of God. I don't know about you, but I connect to this very deeply. Because it wasn't until I heard, not audibly, wasn't until I heard the voice of God say, "You are my beloved," "I take joy in you. I love you without condition." It wasn't until I heard that from God that I finally felt called in some way. Not obligated, not religious, but called. Not guilty, not fearful, but called out into something new. When I finally heard God's voice say this, "You are my beloved, I delight in you," that was a watershed moment for me. Baptism, pun intended, I guess. I wouldn't even think about it. Because I don't know about you, but this was not exactly the words that I heard God speaking over me in my church growing up. This was not communicated very well. Those that spoke on behalf of God to me and over me were not saying all the time, "You are my beloved child and you make me happy." It was a little more, "There's nothing really good about you. You're kind of a big disappointment. Luckily, God doesn't have to look at you because there's Jesus," and, you know, these kind of things. It's funny because I grew up in a church of wonderful parents. People who intuitively knew to speak this over their own children, right? And yet somehow we didn't make that connection with God, and I don't know why. But if each person had been sitting in front of their own children in their house and say, "Get it together, there's nothing lovable about you by yourself. I'm pretty disappointed in who you are as a creation," and you started and ended every day with that, you wouldn't produce very well-adjusted children. And while I was fairly well-adjusted at home, at least as far as my parents knew, I was not a very well-adjusted child of God. And I really think this is where the roots of it were. I can't overstate the importance of this idea to me. I don't think the journey can truly begin without it. It is the proper backdrop onto which everything else is painted. The absence of that belovedness, of that voice of God whispering this into our lives, the absence of that is the poison in the well. In fact, I would go ahead and say, even though this doesn't work well with the Lenten theme, don't go to the wilderness without it. You're not ready for it. The wilderness will not be a good place without that voice of God speaking over us first. I believe a person of faith who hasn't heard the voice speak this over them and speak this over every neighbor they come into contact with is a dangerous religious person indeed. Hearing our name, you are the beloved child of God. Are you perfect? Obviously not. Some of you closer than others, but no, you're not. Are you without mistake? No. Are you falling short of what you know you want to do and who you want to be and what you were created to be? Absolutely. But just as I am with my own child, that does not affect the belovedness, the source of joy that comes. The naming that comes before the calling. It's a beautiful thing, and I hope if in your kind of deepest part of who you are, you know you still haven't heard that voice, I give you permission to mentally check out from here on out and just work on that. Because the importance can't be overstated. But once we have heard that voice, then something very odd and difficult comes next. This loving parent drives Jesus into the wilderness. And there's no getting around it in this language, like driven to the wilderness. It's very counterintuitive. To go directly and immediately from you make me happy to pushing someone into the desert. Now, it makes sense for the bad kid, for the prodigal son, for the one that is doing something wrong. Go to your room and think about what you've done, right? I mean, every parent has said that at some point. But very rarely is there the sentence coming out of a parent mouth that's, man, you are amazing. I love you. Congratulations on your straight A's. Now we're putting in a bus to military school. It's not usually how that kind of conversation goes, right? So it's weird to our ears. But I think that's partly because we have the wrong associations with the wilderness. The wilderness is not there to cause harm. In fact, it is important to note that it doesn't say anything about it. God does push to the wilderness, but God does not do any harm. In fact, God sends angels to care, right? This is really important. Because I got in one of those dumb Facebook conversations this week, and that was the thing. I gotta stop talking to Lacey Mae's friends. But I'm good. I don't need to talk gun control or any of that kind of stuff on Facebook. I know how that conversation goes, and I know that I don't really know anything, honestly. But when someone puts something like, "Well, it's just all part of God's plan," I kind of can't shut up. I just can't. Like, I can't do it. That's exactly what was God's glorious plan. Is that right?
Magnificent plan.
Sorry, didn't mean to misquote. I'll let that go. God is not seeking to do harm here. The wilderness is not about punishment or harm. But to be the beloved does not mean that I get spared resistance or struggle. Not at all. In fact, the least loving thing I could do for my daughter is to remove all struggle and resistance from her life. We've all met those kids. And we've all met those parents. And I know it's none of you, so they're the worst, aren't they? I mean, it's just the worst. It's the worst thing you can do to a kid, just about. Eventually, my daughter would become physically and emotionally atrophied. She'd be unable to navigate anything, unable to control any of her own life that she should be able to control. Now, this is not to say that you release them into the wild with no help or protection, right? The angel served. But you don't avoid the wilderness. The scariest kids on the planet are the ones who have had no resistance in their life whatsoever, or have been sent out with no help at all. I want neither of those for myself as a child of God or for my child. The desert is where we truly learn how and who to be in this world. Throughout Scripture, that's the image. God rescue us from being slaves. God rescue us from building these pyramids. We're tired of being oppressed. And God says, you're mine. I love you. Go to the wilderness. For 40 years, you won't be able to work and achieve anything. You're going to depend on me for food. You're going to depend on a fire in the sky to guide you where you're going to go. If you take more than you can possibly eat and take it back to your tent, it's going to stink up your tent. The wilderness is how we learn how to be who we are called to be. Without temptation, without risk, without care from others in our time of need, we are in big trouble. The wilderness is not punishment. Resistance and challenge is not bad. I was talking with some other pastors this week about this passage, and we all kind of wondered out loud. Would the disciples have acted differently when crucifixion time came if they had gone to the desert too? Like, is that one of the things that separated the Jesus who could stand there and do what needed to be done and face what needed to be faced and those that ran and lied to little girls? Right? Huh, interesting little thought experiment. So we are named beloved children of God. We are challenged and given resistance in this world. And then, maybe only then, we can proclaim the good news of a different kind of kingdom. After we learn who we really are to the only one that matters, after we learn we are the beloved children of the Creator of all things, after we experience resistance, testing, risk, care, healing, then, and only then, are we ready to announce with some experience and some knowledge that this is all good news, that there is a better kingdom, there's a better way of operating in this world, that there's a better way of living and behaving and relating and loving here and now. And it is a way that has been tested and lived out within the mess of real life. It's really important to field test this stuff, right? It's one of the reasons, I'm not saying this is Christ-like, but it's one of the reasons why when the 18-year-old missionary from another religious tradition knocks on my door, it starts telling me all about the world and God and life, no matter how nice they are, no matter how good a conversation that we have, there's that voice in the back of my brain that says, you have no idea. You're 18. Come on. You know how much I knew when I was 18 years old? And this, I mean, it's sincere, and I'm not mad about that. It doesn't bother me at all. But, you know, there's that thing that goes, this hasn't been field tested yet. All right? And I'm wary of any religious conviction that hasn't been field tested, including my own. We're named, we're challenged, we're tested, and then we can proclaim. We move towards Easter through this season of Lent. We don't skip to Easter, we go through the desert. And maybe as we go through the season of Lent, we can hold all these things together in these 40 days. Maybe we can once again, as we should each day, open our ears again fully to the voice of God who tells us you are loved. You are truly, deeply, without condition, loved right now as you are. You make me happy. You are my beloved. You bring me joy. And if you haven't heard this voice yet, please try to pull those things out by the root that are drowning that voice out, because it's poisoning the well. We hear the voice of God whispering the belovedness over us. And with this most important thing in place, we then can lean into the wilderness. Sometimes we're forced into the wilderness, and sometimes we choose it. Sometimes we give up, you know, chocolate or coffee. Or we share the burden of someone whose pain we can't fully understand and we don't know what to do with. Or we offer charitably to someone in a way that hurts us. Or we are hospitable, or we are fill in the blank. Sometimes, oftentimes during Lent, this is why we fast from things. We choose some form of wilderness. But we lean into that wilderness. We lean into the resistance. We face the beasts in this world, and we allow the angels to serve us in the struggle. We field test the good news. The good news that there is a new way to live in this world. And finally, with all this in our hearts and on our minds and the dirt of it under our fingernails, we announce the good news. One that has been tested and worked out. The good news that within the unconditional love of Christ, there is a new way of being in this world. And it is good. Let's pray.